Okay, how do we cure karmic disease? That's what we're talking about in this Go Show. What is karmic disease? How do we cure it in a very 20,000 foot way? I can say that our practice of Buddhism is our practice of curing karmic disease. Basically because we are, in our practice, invoking our Buddha nature, invoking our Buddha wisdom, walking the Bodhisattva way in order to see with clarity, in other words, to detach ourselves from the daily, constant, moment-to-moment delusions of our attachments, our desire to make permanent everything in our experience. All right, that's at a very high level. Excuse me, my neck. It's been a day. I started out, if you, please don't think I'm filthy. You see, I've got some grease in my hand. I've used a citrus cleaner. I've washed my hands several times. I've been changing a water pump in an old F-150 truck. That's my life when I'm not doing this. So I apologize for that. You don't need to know that. But so let's continue with this Go Show and see what else Nichiren in his scholarship utilizes to make this point, to show in the teachings what it is to cure or to counter karmic dis-ease obstacles, right? In the light of the above quotations, it would seem that your illness cannot have originated in anything other than the six causes of disease. Okay, here we go. I will set aside the first five causes for the moment. Illnesses of the sixth, which result from karma, are the most difficult to cure. As I've said many times, our entire life is a momentum of a kinetics of energy that are an amalgam of energies that instantiated us, that birthed us into this samsaric existence. So all of those energies are extant constantly, moment to moment, right? It's kind of like your DNA. It's your karma. So how do you modify that karma? Not easily. It takes time. It takes dedication. It takes resolve. We keep coming back to that word, right? They vary in severity, he goes on to say, and one cannot make any fixed pronouncements. But we know that the gravest illnesses result from the karma created by slandering the Lotus Sutra. Even Shen Nung, Huang Ti, Hua To, and Pian Chui threw up their hands, and water holder, water carrier, Jivaka, and Vimalakirti likewise kept silent. Such illnesses can only be cured by the good medicine of the one Buddha Shakyamuni's Lotus Sutra, as that sutra itself explains. Myoho Renge Kyo. The Nirvana Sutra, referring to the Lotus Sutra, states, quote, even the offenses of slandering this correct teaching will be eradicated if one repents and professes a resolute mind and conviction in the correct teaching. No teaching other than this correct teaching can save or protect one. For this reason, one should take a resolute mind in the correct teaching. End quote. The great teacher Ching Si said, quote, the Nirvana Sutra is itself pointing to the Lotus Sutra and saying that it is the ultimate. He further said, quote, it is like the case of a person who falls to the ground, but who then pushes himself up from the ground and rises to his feet again. Thus, even though one may slander the correct teaching, one will eventually be saved from the evil paths or lower worlds of life experience. End quote. Bodhisattva Vasubandhu was originally a scholar of Hinayana Buddhism. In an effort to prevent Mahayana Buddhism from spreading throughout the five regions of India, he wrote 500 treatises on the Hinayana. Later, however, he encountered Bodhisattva Asanga and abandoned his erroneous views on the spot. Facing Asanga, he said that in order to eradicate this offense all at once, he wanted to cut out his own tongue. Asanga stopped him, saying, "Vasubandhu, use that tongue to praise Mahayana." Vasubandhu immediately wrote 500 Mahayana treatises in which he refuted Hinayana. He also made a vow that as long as he lived, he would never place the Hinayana teachings on his tongue. In this way, he eradicated his past offenses and was later reborn in the heaven where Bodhisattva Maitreya dwells. So, this is a very powerful thing to say about Myoho Renge Kyo, is that even if you spent many years stubbornly adhering to incorrect views in your life, if one day you have that insight, that aha moment, and you go, "Oh, wow, I've been wrong all this time. I've been clouded by an opinion that I've just clung to," right? Attachment rears its ugly head. So how could Myoho Renge Kyo not provide a release from that? If you've made that realization, then you're already on the way, right? Because that's what Myoho Renge Kyo is all about, is detaching you from the obstacles that keep you suffering. Karmic disease. Follow? Bodhisattva Ashvaghosha, a native of eastern India, was 13th among the successors of the Buddha's teachings. At one time, Ashvaghosha had been a leader of Brahmanism. When he debated with the Buddhist monk Punyayashas over the validity of their respective teachings, however, he quickly realized that the superiority of Buddhist teachings. Ashvaghosha was prepared to behead himself in order to pay for his past offenses, saying, quote, "I have been my own worst enemy, leading myself to hell." But Punyayashas admonished him, saying, "Ashvaghosha, do not behead yourself. Use that head and mouth to praise Mahayana." Ashvaghosha soon thereafter wrote The Awakening of a Resolute Mind and Conviction in the Mahayana, in which he refuted Brahmanism and Hinayana. This marked the beginning of the spread of Mahayana Buddhism in India. How important was that? The great teacher Chitsang of the, you know, there's a point made there that I don't want to just lightly gloss over. I don't know if it's especially in the West. I think all of mankind, when we endeavor to better ourselves, we are nonetheless human. And sometimes the things that we do to better ourselves, because we see improvement, because we're learning and teaching ourselves, we create very strong bonds with those things. And as is pointed out here, sometimes the bonds we make actually act as a stubborn attachment, an obstacle to greater insight and skills. So that's one half of what I want to point out. The other half is that when we do realize that we've stubbornly adhered to something that has not the accomplishments that we originally set out to have, or that have in fact led us astray, We tend to want to abolish it altogether. We want to erase it. And we tend to do that through some sort of self-punishment. You see that? Cutting out my tongue, beheading myself, right? It's not unique to Asia or Europe or North America or South America. It's a feature of samsaric. It's a how shall I say? It's a backlash from attachment, right? We so desperately now, having realized what we were doing, so desperately want to unattach that we somehow equate that to some kind of a self-punishment to atone for it. But right away, in every one of these, and this is, I think this is a key point of Buddhism. No, don't punish yourself. Celebrate your insight and use it to launch you forward. That's very important. It's akin to something that we hear about in other fields outside of Buddhism, very practical fields, if you will. And I would argue Buddhism is a practical practice, but setting that aside for the moment, we hear these cliches about failure. To have a fear of failure freezes you up. You can't grow without accepting that failure is part of the process. Right? We hear that rhetoric in business, in school, in life, in so many ways. Right? It's not falling down that's the problem, it's how you get up. Right? If you trip and fall, should you sit there and just pound your legs for not having worked properly? No, get up, correct whatever it was, and use that as impetus to walk more correctly, more efficiently, whatever. That's the point. That's always the point when we talk about something in man terms as success, man being man and woman, of course. I'm talking about this mankind, our samsaric existence. Whenever you catch yourself wanting to punish yourself in any way whatsoever, stop and think what you're doing. Because punishing yourself really reinforces the attachment, doesn't it? If you want to rid yourself of the attachment, then do that. No longer pay attention to it. Move beyond it immediately. Ah, punish the attachment, not yourself. Because your Buddha is awaiting your realization, your invocation. It's hidden in those paragraphs, but that's a very, very strong message that I didn't want to miss with you. All right, so let's continue with the Gosho. The great teacher Cheng Sang, or Chiasheng Su Temple, of Chiasheng Su Temple, was among the most outstanding scholar in China. He was the founder of the Three Treatises School and lived on Mount Huiqi in Wu. Believing that none could equal him in knowledge, he raised the banner of his pride to its highest. We know that's a formula for disaster, right? Ego. He challenged the great teacher Tendai to discuss the meaning of the passage that states, quote, "Among the sutras I have preached, now preach, and will preach, this Lotus Sutra is the most difficult to believe and the most difficult to understand," end quote. In the debate, Chitsang was soundly defeated and thereupon renounced his misguided beliefs. In order to expiate his serious offense of slander of the correct teaching and of those who upheld it, he gathered more than 100 eminent scholars and begged the great teacher Tendai Chiche to lecture to them. Chitsang used his body as a bridge for the great teacher Tendai to climb onto the preaching platform, supporting Tendai's feet with his head. Moreover, he served Tendai for 7 years, cutting firewood and drawing water for him. He ceased giving lectures of his own, dispersed his followers, and in order to purge himself of the great conceit, refrained from reciting the Lotus Sutra. After the great teacher Tendai's death, Chitsang had an audience with the emperor of Sui dynasty to pay his respects. As he was leaving, he clutched his majesty's knees and tearfully bade him farewell. Sometime later, Chitsang looked into an old mirror and, seeing his reflection, condemned himself for the past errors. All these many acts of penitence were done to eradicate his karmic disease. Now, this is a story, and although there may be some fact to this, I would argue, as I did a moment ago, that his punishment phase was well expressed in supporting Tendai as the preeminent teacher, as dispersing his followers and supporting Tendai's preachings from then on. That's laudable. I think that he did the task there. And that I think further, he should have endeavored to learn from Tendai how to preach Lotus Sutra. But he failed to do that, and in the end, really condemned himself for his past errors. That, I would argue, isn't. He didn't learn the lesson well. He condemned his life for his past errors, but he would have done better to have taken on the teachings and, after Tendai's passing, been his, not replacement, but his, the steward of his memory, if you will, promulgating Tendai's teachings. He could have done that. And that would have been even greater, because then he would have allowed himself to do what? Invoke his Buddha nature, which is the whole point. He missed it. And that, to me, is lamentable. He did a lot of great things, but he got stuck on the punishment phase, and he kept himself from attaining enlightenment, which, by extent, and this is why it's slander, by the way, by keeping himself from attaining his own Buddha nature, how many people could he have influenced to do the same? See, there's no such thing as solipsism. There's no such thing as only for me. No matter how isolated you make yourself, you are an integral root system, like the aspen trees. It may appear that we're separate beings, but we really are not. Because our environment is us as well. So by punishing himself and not taking on Tendai's teachings to promulgate, even with humility, to control that thing that went out of control earlier, his ego, how many people could he have brought to Myoho Rengekyo? And he didn't, because he himself did not. He was too busy punishing himself. Still attached, I would argue. Let's see where we are. Oh, we got plenty of time. Okay, next paragraph. The Lotus, the wonderful sutra of the single vehicle, is the golden words of the three kinds of Buddhas. Likened to the bright jewel, it ranks highest among all the sutras. Quote, I have preached, now preach, and will preach. Right? That's from the Lotus. Actually, I think it's in the Immeasurable Meanings. But still, that's the ovation to the Lotus Sutra. There are passages in the Lotus Sutra that say, quote, among the sutras, it, the Lotus Sutra, holds the highest place. And, quote, among those sutras, the Lotus is the foremost, end quote. The great teacher Dengyo said that the Lotus School is the school founded by the Buddha himself. I have made a thorough study of the various true word sutras, such as the Mahavacharana, the Diamond Crown, and the Suddhodikara, but have found nothing written in them to compare with the above passages of the Lotus Sutra. The claim that these sutras are superior to the Lotus appears to be no more than a prejudiced view held by Shan Wu Wei. Chin Kan Chi, Pu Kung, Kobo, Jikaku, and Chisho. From this we realize that the true intent of the Buddhas Shakyamuni and Mahavacharana lay just in the supremacy of the Lotus Sutra. When the three great teachers, Kobo, Jikaku, and Chisho, the founders of the true word school, or teachings, in Japan, went to China during the Tang Dynasty, they inherited from Hui Kyo and Fa Chuan the deceptions and delusions originally held by the three Tripitaka masters, Shan Wu Wei, Qin Kang Chi, and Pu Kung. When, on returning to China, or Japan, they propagated the Lotus Sutra and the true word teachings, they hid the brilliant moon of the Lotus Sutra, the supreme vehicle that surpasses all the other sutras of the past, present, and future, and showed the firefly glimmer of the true word mandalas of the two realms. Not only that, but they slandered the Lotus Sutra, saying that it was a work of childish theory and belonged to the region of darkness. These comments, however, were like a dagger turned against those who made them. It is not the Lotus, but the Mahavacharana Sutra that is filled with childish theory and is in the region of darkness. The founders of the true word teachings were warped to begin with. So how could their disciples and followers be upright? Contamination at the source of a river will pollute its entire length. Because of this, the land of the sun has had a long dark night, and the sun tree is now about to be blighted by an alien frost. Although you were, now see, we went in this letter from a compassionate discourse of Buddhist scholarship to address the addressee of this letter, his illness. Or her illness, I forget, I think his. And now Nichiren is in full swing on the scholarship of the good medicine, if you will, of the Lotus Sutra and how it holds its place. Now, it's no accident that he does this. It's not because he doesn't care about who he's writing the letter to. Once again, he's very much aware that the letters he writes are used as teaching tools to his disciples all over Japan. He can't be there. They don't have mass transit, and they don't have internet and cell phones. I know I'm saying silly things, but really think about it. Getting information out to people was very difficult in those days, made even more difficult by the fact that the authoritarian forces, samurai, the shogunate, was all over the country. And if you were a lone traveler with maybe, whether you were alone or usually with some friends to travel these great distances and carry these messages, you would be subject to random searches and questionings and who you working for and what are you doing and what are you bringing with you. And they would often have to conceal that they were in communication with Nichiren Shonin, because that alone could get them killed or imprisoned. They could end up losing their lands, their assets. It was a dangerous time. So any opportunity to help get points of view and teachings out to his disciples, of course he used. And the more the addressee of the letter was someone who was known to be a point of contact for a larger sangha, the more doctrinal his letters would be. But don't worry, he'll come back to the person he's writing this letter to. I'm just showing you how these letters take the form of teachings for a very valid reason. They truly are the way that Nichiren was able to spread the Lotus Sutra teachings through his own scholarship, right? To continue. Although you were not in the mainstream of the True Word School, you were still a retainer of a patron of that teaching. Now this touches on the other point that I was going to say. The True Word School was omnipresent in Japan at the time. So not only was Nichiren sending out teachings of the Lotus, but he also had to set out teachings in order to defeat the influence, the great influence, the omnipresent influence held by the samurai, the shogunate of this True Word School, as well as, you know, the Nembutsu and the Zen. But the True Word was the, well, if you will, official school. So this is why he especially calls them out. And here we learn that the person he's writing this letter to was in fact, you know, involved with the True Word influences, since he worked for one of their agents. Oh, dry mouth. I apologize. And congestion. Oh, that's what I get for going outside. All right. You lived for many years in a house whose family was devoted to an erroneous doctrine, and month after month your mind was infected by the teachers of error. Though huge mountains may crumble, and the great seas dry up, this offense of yours will not easily pass away. However, because of the influence of karmic bonds and the compassion with which you are imbued in this lifetime, you met me, a monk of humble learning, when you least expected it, and determined to reform your ways. Therefore, though at the moment your offense has brought on these boils from which you suffer, in the future you will be spared worse suffering. King Ajatasattru suffered from severe boils because he committed the five cardinal sins and slandered the correct teaching. But his boils disappeared instantly when the light produced by the Buddha's moon-loving meditation illuminated his body. And though it had been predicted that the king had only 21 days left to live, his lifespan was extended by 40 years. In deep appreciation, he earnestly requested 1,000 arhats to record the golden words of the Buddha's entire lifetime, thus spreading the Buddha's teachings into the ages of the former, middle, and latter days of the law. Now see, that's the difference between Ajatasattru and who were we talking about earlier? Sorry. The guy who punished himself. Dark Knight. What was his name? Silly Sylvain. Chitsang. Remember, I pointed out that after Tendai died, he continued to punish himself. And what he should have done is take on the mantle of the Lotus Sutra for himself, to attain his own enlightenment as well as influence others. That's the Bodhisattva way. But he didn't do that. Now, Ajatasattru did do that. And so the point is, he spread the entire the Buddhist teachings into the ages of the former, middle, and latter days of law. Thousands of years. That's the big difference, right? Your boils, he's coming back to as he closes the letter here. Your boils have resulted from only one offense, slandering the correct teaching. The a priori and supreme law you now embrace surpasses the moon-loving meditation. How then could your boils possibly not be healed and your lifespan not extended? If these words of mine proved untrue, you should shout, "The Buddha, the eye of the entire world, is a great liar, and the lotus, the wonderful sutra of the single vehicle, is a scripture of clever foolishness. The world-honored one should give me proof if he cares about his good name. All the sages and worthies should come to protect me if they do not want to be false to their vows." Now that's gave me a little chill, because that reminds me of something I said in a video about chanting, getting results from Daimoku and the Gohonzon. And there have been times when I have gone to this mandala, chanted with tears in my eyes, and shouted at this mandala, "Give me results, do it now. I don't care what I have to go through. This must change. I've done that. And this sounds like similar advice from Nichiren. Don't be afraid to demand your Buddha-ness. Whatever your karma is, it may require that you commit at that level. What I was breaking through was something that was very stubborn in me. I still don't know what it was, but things did change. And a lot of things changed in my life, and I don't know how many of them were related to what karma it was that I was busting through, but it was required for me. Last words. A letter cannot convey all that one would like to say, and words cannot fully express what is in the heart. The rest will have to wait until the next time we meet. With my deep respect, Nichiren. Reply to the lay priest, Ota. So there you have it. This was to a monk that was a teacher and a spreader of Nichiren's Lotus Sutra Myoho Renge Kyo teaching. And so there you have it. This is why he included so much scholarship in the letter, because he knows Ota will not only be able to use this to cure his karmic illness, but to aid him in spreading the teachings of the Lotus Sutra. And with that, we end this Go Show. I want to give you my deep respect and appreciation for being here, for listening, for keeping your practice strong. Take care of your health, and I'll see you in the next one. Namo Myoho Renge Kyo.